Hello, I'm author Carnigaldin. Welcome to the next instalment of Wolf of the Plains.
The camp they came to was set against the dark face of an ancient landslip, sheltered from the worst of the wind by the hill. 2 dozen gares clustered there like lichen, with wild dogs and tethered ponies everywhere. Despite aching for rest and hot food, Temujin could not help looking around at the bustling camp. He could see Jelmer kept it on a war footing. Warriors on their way to a watch strode by with their heads down against the wind. There were far more men than women and children, and that was a blessing when they were ready to fight at a moment's notice, but it could not go on forever. Men followed their leaders to war, but they wanted a home to return to, with a woman's touch, and children round the feet like puppies. He walked through the camp, shrugging off his weariness as the details caught his interest. He saw watchers high on the cliff above his head, bundled against the wind. It showed Jelmer's thoroughness. The camp had a sense of urgency in every movement, rather than the usual winter lethargy that affected the tribes. He felt the suppressed excitement. There were new faces there, too, men and women who looked at him as if he was a stranger. Then Jelmer came out to meet them, and Kassar came skidding from a different gear, beaming in delight. As they dismounted, grinning boys ran to take their ponies without having to be summoned. Temujin was pleased with Jelmer's stewardship of the tribe. They had not grown fat and slow in his absence, and Aslan's pride in his son was obvious. Then, to Temujin's surprise, Jelmer went down on one knee and reached out for his hand. "No, Jelmer, stand up," Temujin said, half irritably. "I want to get out of the wind." Jelmer raised his head. "Let the new men see, my lord Khan. They do not know you yet." Temujin understood, and his appreciation of Jelmer went up a degree. Some of the wanderer families would have known Jelmer as the closest thing to a Khan for the months Temujin had been away. It was important to show them the true leader had returned. He allowed Jelmer to place his hand on his head before lifting him up and embracing him. He looked around him once more, seeing how many faces had stopped in the snow and wind to watch the scene. As he caught the eyes of those he knew, they bowed their heads in acknowledgement. "I have shown that a tribe can come from the Kirai, the Wolves, the Woyela, the Namans," he thought. "We are one people. When we are strong enough, I will make the rest come to me, or I will break them one at a time. We are one people. We are Mongols. We are the Silver People, and one Khan can lead all." "I am home," Temujin said. It was little more than a raiding camp on frozen ground, with barely enough food or shelter for any of them. But there was no question. He had brought Borte home. Wen Chao kept a close eye on his servants through the hangings of the litter as they struggled under its weight. With 3 men to each wooden handle, the labor should have been enough to keep them warm. But when he glanced out of the silk awning, he noticed more than one was growing blue around the lips. The winter snow had begun to melt, but there was still crunching ice underfoot, and the wind was cruel. He suspected he would lose another slave before they reached the Mongol camp, if not 2. He pulled his furs around him and wondered peevishly if they would find the camp at all. He amused himself by cursing Togrul, the Khan of the Karait, who had claimed to know where the raiding band was waiting out the winter. Then he reached for one of his scrolls of philosophy, finding calm in their simple thoughts. He had never been comfortable with the high moral tone of Confucius himself, but his disciple Jun Ji was a man Wen would have liked to take for a drink. Wen heard the thumping rhythm of hoofbeats before his litter was laid down, and he heard a nervous throat being cleared. He sighed. The travel had been dull, but the thought of mingling once more with unwashed tribesmen tried his patience to the limit. It sometimes seemed that he would end his days among the ugly Mongol tribes, frozen to death, or poisoned by their endless rancid mutton and sour milk. It was really too much. He moved the hanging aside and stared into the face of his most trusted guard.
"Well, Yuan?"
Yuan was crouching by the litter, and dropped flat as soon as Wen spoke, pressing his forehead against the icy ground. Wen sighed audibly.
"You may speak, Yuan. If you do not, we will be here all day."
In the distance, he heard the mournful note of warning horns on the wind. Yuan glanced back in the direction he'd ridden from.
"We found their master.
They're coming, Wen nodded. When they have finished blustering and yelping, let me know.
He let the silk hanging fall back into place, hearing the rumble of approaching horses. Temujin rode with Arslan and Jelme on his flanks. 10 of his best men came with them, while Kassar and Kachyun had split smaller forces around the camp to look for a second attack. From the first sighting, Temujin wondered why so many armed men seemed to be guarding a box. The men themselves were strange, though he recognized seasoned warriors when he saw them. Instead of attacking, they had formed a defensive square around the box to wait for his arrival. Temujin glanced at Arslan with his eyebrows raised.
"Tread carefully, my lord,"
Arslan shouted over the sound of galloping hooves.
"It can only be a representative of the Qin, someone of rank."
Temujin looked back at the strange scene with renewed interest. He had heard of the great cities in the east, but never seen one of their people. They were said to swarm like flies and use gold as a building material. It was so common. Whoever it was, they were important enough to travel with a dozen guards and enough slaves to carry the lacquered box. In itself, that was a strange thing to see in the wilderness. It shone blackly, and at its sides were draped hangings the color of the sun. Temujin lowered the bow, giving a short call to those around him to do the same. If it was a trap, the Qin warriors would find they had made an error. He reined in, his men keeping their formation perfectly as they matched him. Temujin tied his bow to the thong on his saddle and rode up to the man at the center of the strange party. His yellow gaze was steady on the warrior, and he noted the overlapping armor with interest. Like the box itself, the panels were lacquered in a substance that shone like black water. It looked as if it would stop an arrow, and Temujin wondered how he could obtain a set to test. The warrior watched Temujin from beneath the rim of a padded helmet, his face half covered by cheek pieces of iron. He looked ill to Temujin, a ghastly yellow color. Yet the whites of his eyes were clear, and he did not flinch from the sight of so many armed men.
"My master of the Jade Court wishes to speak with you," Yuan said stiffly, his accent strange to Temujin's ears.
Like his master, Yuan disliked the warriors of the tribes. They had no discipline of the sort he understood, for all their ferocity. He saw them as ill-tempered hounds, and it was undignified to have to converse with them like human beings. "Is he hiding in that box?" Temujin asked. The officer tensed. Perhaps Temujin's amusement showed in his eyes, for Yuan restrained himself and sat like stone.
"I am to say a message from Togrul of the Kerate," Yuan continued.
Temujin reacted to the name with intense curiosity. His camp contained 3 wanderers who had been banished from that tribe.
"Say your message, then. Trust these men and offer them guest rights in my name," Yuan said.
Temujin grinned suddenly, surprising the Qin soldier. "Perhaps that would be wise. Have you considered the alternative?" Yuan looked back at Temujin, irritated.
"There is no alternative. You have been given your orders."
Temujin laughed at that, though he never lost his awareness of the soldier in reach of a sword.
"Togrul of the Kerate is not my Khan," he said. "He does not give orders here."
Still, his interest had grown in the party who had come into the lands around his war camp.
"I might just have you all killed, and take whatever is in that fine box you're protecting," Temujin said, more to sting the man than anything else.
To his surprise, the officer did not grow angry as he had before. Instead, a grim smile appeared on his face.
"You do not have enough men," Yuan replied with certainty.
As Temujin was about to respond, a voice from the box snapped an order in a language he could not understand. It sounded like the honking of geese, but the officer bowed his head immediately. Temujin could not resist his curiosity any longer.
"Very well, I grant you guest rights in my home," he said. "Ride in with me."
Wen Chao waited until his litter had been placed on the ground and Yuan had come to the side. He suppressed groans at the sight of the familiar gears and scrawny sheep, the smell of the mutton fat on the breeze. As Yuan drew back the silk hangings, Wen stepped out, breathing as shallowly as he possibly could. He had yet to meet a tribesman who troubled to wash more than once or twice a year, and then only if he fell in a river. Nonetheless, He stepped out into the cold wind with as much dignity as he could muster. Even if he had not seen how the other men deferred to the young one with the yellow eyes, Wen would have known him for the leader. In the court of Kai Feng, they knew of those who were tigers in the reeds, those who had the warrior's blood running in them. This Temujin was one of those tigers, Wen decided, as he faced those eyes. Such eyes they were. Wen had seen nothing like them. The wind was bitter for one dressed in thin robes, but Wen showed no discomfort as he bowed. My name is Wen Chao, ambassador of the Qin court of the Northern Sung. I am honored to be in your camp. Word of your battles with the Tatars has spread far across the land. And that brought you here in your little box, did it? Temujin replied. He was fascinated by every aspect of the strange man, waited upon by so many servants. He too had the yellow skin that looked ill, but he bore himself well in the wind as it plucked at his robes. Temujin estimated his age as more than 40, though the skin was unlined. He wore a green robe that seemed to shimmer. His hair was as black as their own, but scraped back on his head and held in a tail with a clasp of silver. To Temujin's astonishment, he saw that the man's hands ended in nails like claws that caught the light. Temujin wondered how long the man could stand the cold. He seemed not to notice it, but his lips were growing blue. Wen bowed again before speaking. I bring greetings of the Jade Court. We have heard much of your success here, and there are many things to discuss. Your brother, in the Karate, sends his greetings. What does Togrul want with me? Temujin replied. Wen fumed, feeling the cold bite at him. Would he not be invited into the warm gears? He decided to push a little. Have I not been granted guest rights, my lord? It is not fitting to talk of great issues with so many ears around us. Temujin shrugged. The man was clearly freezing, and he wanted to hear what had brought him across a hostile plain before he passed out. You are welcome here. He tasted the name on his tongue before mangling it horribly. Wencho? The old man controlled a wince, and Temujin smiled at his pride. Wen Chao, my lord, the diplomat replied. The tongue must touch the roof of the mouth. Temujin nodded. Come into the warmth, then, Wen. I will have hot salt tea brought to you. Ah, the tea, Wen Chao murmured as he followed Temujin into a ragged gear. How I have missed it. In the gloom, Wen seated himself and waited patiently until a bowl of hot tea was pressed into his hands by Temujin himself. The gear filled with men, who stared at him uneasily, and Wen forced himself to breathe shallowly until he became used to the sweaty closeness of them. Temujin watched as Wen tasted the tea through pursed lips, clearly pretending to enjoy it. Tell me of your people, Temujin said. I have heard they are very numerous. Wen nodded, grateful for the chance to speak rather than sip. We are a divided kingdom. The southern borders hold more than 60,000 souls under the Sung Emperor, he said. The northern Qin, perhaps the same. Temujin blinked. The numbers were larger than he could imagine. I think you are exaggerating, Wen Chao, he replied, pronouncing the name correctly. Wen shrugged. Who can be sure? The peasants breed worse than lice. There are more than 1,000 officials in the Kaifeng court alone, and the official count took many months. I do not have the exact figure. Wen enjoyed the looks of astonishment that passed between the warriors. And you? Are you a Khan amongst them? Temujin persisted. Wen shook his head. Whose man are you, then? Temujin asked. Wen smiled. Perhaps the first minister of the civil service. But I think you mean the Sung emperors. They rule the north and south. Perhaps I will live to see both halves of the Middle Kingdom rejoined. Temujin struggled to understand. As they stared at him, Wen placed his bowl down and reached inside his robe for a pouch. A collective tension stopped him. I am reaching for a picture, my lord. That is all. Temujin gestured for him to continue, fascinated at the idea. He watched as Wen removed a packet of brightly colored papers and passed one to him. There were strange symbols on it, but in the middle was the face of a young man glaring out. Temujin held the paper at different angles, astonished that the little face seemed to watch him. "You have painters of skill," he admitted grudgingly.
"That is true, my lord. But the paper you hold was printed on a great machine. It has a value, and is given in exchange for goods. With a few more like it, I could buy a good horse in the capital, or a young woman for the passage of a night."
He saw Temujin pass it around to the others, and watched their expressions with interest. They were like children, he thought.
"You use words I do not know," Temujin said. "What is the printing you mentioned?
A great machine.
Perhaps you have decided to fool us in our gears."
He did not speak lightly, and Wen knew that if the tribesmen thought for a moment he was mocking them, he would not survive.
"It is just a way of painting faster than one man alone," Wen said soothingly. "Perhaps you will visit Qin territory one day and see for yourself. I know that the Khan of the Karait is much taken with my culture. He has spoken many times of his desire for land in the Middle Kingdom."
"Togrul said that?" Temujin asked.
Wen nodded.
"It is his dearest wish. There is soil there so rich and black that anything can be grown. Herds of wild horse beyond counting, and better hunting than anywhere in the world. Our lords live in great houses of stone, and have 1,000 servants to indulge their every whim. Togrul of the Karait would wish such a life for himself and his heirs."
"How can you move a house of stone?" one of the other men asked suddenly.
Wen nodded to him in greeting.
"It cannot be moved, as you move your gears. There are some the size of mountains."
Temujin laughed at that, knowing at last that the strange little man was playing games with them.
"Then it would not suit me, Wen," he said. "The tribes must move when the hunting is poor. I would starve to death in that stone mountain, I think."
"You would not, my lord, because your servants would buy food in the markets. They would raise animals to eat and grow crops to make bread and rice for you. You could have 1,000 wives and never know hunger."
"And that appeals to Togrul," Temujin said softly. "I see how it could."
His mind was whirling with so many strange new ideas, but he still had not heard the reason for Wen to seek him out in the wilderness. He saw that Wen was setting his jaw to stop his teeth from chattering, and offered him arag.
"Rub it on your hands and face," he said.
The clear liquid brought a flush to his yellow skin, making it bloom with sudden heat. He drained the rest down his throat, and emptied the second as soon as Temujin had poured it, holding the cup out for a third.
"Perhaps I will journey east some day," Temujin said, "and see these strange things. Yet I wonder why you would leave all that behind, to travel, where my people rule with sword and bow."
"I was sent among the tribes, my lord, to gather allies against the Tatars in the north. Togrul of the Karait believes you are one who shares our dislike for those pale-skinned dogs."
"Togrul is well informed," Temujin replied. He refilled Wen's cup a fourth time, and watched as it too went the way of the others.
"The Khan of the Karait is a man of wisdom," Wen Chao replied. "He has fought the Tatars for years in the north, and received much gold as tribute from my masters. It is a balance, you understand. If I send an order to Kaifeng for 100 ponies to be driven west, they come in a season, and, in return, the Karait spill Tatar blood and keep them away from our borders. We do not want them straying into our land. I am here to offer you the same arrangement. I can give you gold, or horses, swords," Temujin said, "and bows. If I agree, I will want 12 sets of the armor your men are wearing, as well as 100 ponies. I have no more use for gold than I have for a house of stone I cannot move."
"I did not see 100 men in the camp," Wen protested.
Inside, he rejoiced. The bargaining had begun with more ease than he could have imagined.
"You did not see them all," Temujin said with a snort, "and I have not said I agree.
What part does Togrul play in this? Will he come after you to beg me for my help?"
Wen coloured, putting down the cup of arag.
"The Karait are a strong tribe, with more than 300 men under arms, my lord. They heard from Tatar prisoners that you were raiding further and further north."
He paused, choosing his words.
"Togrul is a man of vision, and he sent me, not to beg, but rather to have you join your force to his. Together, you will drive the Tatars back for 12 generations, perhaps."
A subtle menace came into the crowded gear.
"You would have me bend the knee to Togrul,
in return for a few ponies.
You have merely to refuse, and I will leave, Wen said. Togrul does not need a bondsman. He needs a war leader, with ruthlessness and strength. He needs every man you can bring.
You have said much of interest, Wen Chao,
Temujin said after a time.
Leave me now to make my decision.
Kachun, find warm beds for his men, and have stew brought to ease their hunger.
When they were alone, Temujin turned his bright gaze on his most trusted men.
I want this. I want to learn as much as I can about these people. Houses of stone. Slaves by the thousand. Did it not make you itch?
You do not know this, Togrul, Arslan said. Are the silver people for sale, then?
He snorted.
These Jin think we can be bought with promises. What are they to us?
Let us find out, Temujin said.
With the men of the Karate, I can drive a spike into the Tartars. Let the rivers run red with what we will do.
My oath is to you, not to Togrul, Arslan said.
Temujin faced him.
I know it.
I will not be bondsman to any other. Yet if he will join his strength with us, I will have the greater part of the bargain.
Think of Jelme, Arslan. Think of his future.
We are too full of life to build our tribe in ones and twos. Let us leap upwards in great bounds, and risk it all each time.